It says my name is Natalie Burke. I'm Jackie Robinson. The bases are loaded, and I am going to do my best to bat cleanup. All right. So I'm with an organization called Common Health Action. Let's see if the tech guy told me it would do that, but I guess not. All right. Common Health Action is a national nonprofit based in Washington, D.C. The quick and dirty on it is that we often act as an intermediary, meaning that we do a lot of translation work between communities, funders, and agencies to address those conditions that produce poor health outcomes. And the idea is that we want to create equal opportunities in all communities for people to be healthy. Today, I want to talk to you about two initiatives that focus on addressing social determinants of health, partly by building community capacity to create policy change. And the idea is that these communities are working as community coalitions. It's ideally community-based work, and community-based can actually include local government entities, so please keep that in mind. When we think about community capacity, there are a few things that we're finding that are critical and important. One is a sense of community. So identifying who is the community is challenging, probably more challenging than we realize a lot of times when we begin the work. Some people include themselves in the community, although they're not residents, and residents will look at them and say, well, you're in our community, but you're not a part of our community. And it's critical and important to understand who's at the table when you first convene people to sort of do this work. Leadership is a completely different issue, especially at the community level. You understand that in terms of the politics that go along with community-based work. And when I think about leadership challenges that we faced, it's important to think about sort of the collaborative leadership versus the charismatic leadership that often gets things done at the community level, and what actually leads to sustainable change. We talk about things like political capital, political acumen, effective communication, and that ranges from everything to, you know, getting commitments about regular and consistent communication, intentional communication, planned communication, inclusive and transparent communication. Timing is critical to doing any sort of social determinants of health policy change work. What else is happening in the environment? Is there anything that's a hindrance? Is there anything that's an opportunity? And how can you combine the work of the community with those things so that they have a greater chance of being successful? Resources, it goes without saying, infrastructure, and of course, experience. And the idea is that these things then get you to a place where the community is able to create their own opportunities, leverage opportunities, problem solve, sustain their work, and then ultimately get to a place of change. So the first initiative that I'm going to talk about today is called Place Matters. And Place Matters is a Kellogg-funded initiative that builds on the work of Turning Point and Community Voices. It's based out of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies based in Washington, D.C. The Joint Center is the oldest African-American think tank in the country, and this is a different scope of work for them, and it's based within their Health Policy Institute. As a result, and being a think tank, early in the process, they engaged Common Health Action, my organization, to come in and work to provide technical assistance, expertise related to public health, to help the communities in terms of developing logic models and strategic plans and convening national meetings where they could become a national learning community and learn from one another. In terms of Place Matters, there are 16 teams that are located in these places around the country. They were selected from 149 potential sites. The 149 sites were determined by poor health outcomes, their communities of color primarily, socioeconomic status, and a number of other characteristics. From the 149, there was a process that the Joint Center went through with the Kellogg Foundation and with NACHO, National Association of County and City Health Officials, to think about where were communities well-positioned and prepared to engage in social determinants of health policy change work. Where was their capacity? And then sort of on the other end, where was there no capacity? Where was there a need to build a capacity? So what you end up having is actually 16 teams that sort of run along a continuum, where you have those that started in their infancy and those that were very mature in their work already. The second initiative with which we're working is Kaiser's Community Health Initiative, which is sort of a healthy eating, active living focused initiative in the port towns in Prince George's County, Maryland. And the port towns are four small towns, total population around 12,000 people, and they sort of come together as a political construct to support one another in moving forward political agendas at the county level, because they're too small to do that by themselves. But what that means is that there are four jurisdictions and there are four mayors involved in anything that they do. So I'm sure you all understand that that adds layers and layers of complexity. One of the things that I'm going to note that I've noted down here is that the sites were selected and they did not apply. And that's something that I'm going to sort of come back to, okay, because it's actually the same thing with Place Matters and there are implications associated with that. So what are the challenges to doing social determinants of health policy change work? Well, first of all, at the community level, communities are used to being rewarded for doing programs. So they have money, they have a goal, and they accomplish that goal, and it happens within a condensed period of time, and it's very clear. But when you're talking about systems change work, when you're talking about changing policy like housing and education and structural racism, you can't look at it as a program. And to get that sort of perspective transformation to happen takes time. Initially, I think we thought we could get it done quickly, like over a couple of months, like a program is this, and that's a policy. We're not working on programs, we're working on policies. Almost 5 years later in the Place Matters Initiative, and 2 years later in the CHI work, I will tell you that it is a constant work in progress. Because the default, again, you know, I liken it to my parents are from Jamaica, and they speak Patois in the house. And when they, you know, go out in the rest of the world, they speak Americanized English, but you tick them off and they slip back into Patois. I think this is very much sort of the same idea about the whole programs to policies thing. The second thing is about a common language. I don't think going into it that we had any idea that there was such a lack of common language in communities. People are talking at one another and they are not talking about the same things and it is dangerous. So I'll get to some of the issues around common language, but there are a lot of assumptions that go into when people at the community level are communicating with one another. Not to mention the fact that both initiatives expect elected officials and policymakers to be engaged, and Lord knows they don't speak the same language. Sorry if any of you were in the room, but they don't speak the same language as community. So embrace the data. You might as well say eat your vegetables. I mean, it is so hard to get at the community level, not only for people to acknowledge the importance of data, but to actually want to use that to make their argument. And I think some of that has to do with community coalitions generally come together around justice issues, things about which they're fired up, that they're sort of a moral component to what it is that they're doing. And you start talking about data and they're like, yeah, but what are we fired up about? It's not that they're fired up about the data usually. Leadership champions power and control. In both of these initiatives, so there are 16 teams working in Place Matters, and we have one community coalition working on CHI. The thing that they have in common is that the funders, in essence, came to these places and said, here's an opportunity for you, do you want to do it? We're going to take resources and invest them in your community for a fairly long period of time. I mean, Place Matters has been going on for about 5 years now. And with the CHI work, Kaiser has told them they're willing to be there for 7 to 10 years. Who says that? 7 to 10 years. And with the CHI work in particular, it's about obesity. People are not on fire about obesity in a community. People are on fire because in that particular community, they had train tracks that divided the community that if a train came through, one side couldn't get to the other side. So they came together, got fired up, and got the county to commit the money to put the train tracks up above the road. That's something that inspired them. It was tangible, it was clear, it was within a specific period of time, and they could go with that. But then you come in and you talk about healthy eating, active living, built environment, school policy, community farming. It just didn't resonate in the same way. So it's taken time to stoke the fire. I think with Place Matters, Different teams are in different places when it comes to that, the fact that the work came to them and the opportunity came to them. So in our role, a lot of the technical assistance has to do with stoking the fire, which means identifying the leadership, which means identifying champions, working with teams to identify champions, and which means helping them to sort through the issues about power and control at the local level. Both of these initiatives assume volunteerism. So particularly with Place Matters, the teams are not really getting money in their hand. They're getting technical assistance, they're getting opportunities, but they're not getting a grant that's being given to them specifically. And we have to keep in mind the impact of volunteer fatigue, because social determinants of health work and policy change takes time. Of course, resources and shifting sands. Goes without saying, because of the political climate in the country, I think resources that were available even when the CHI work started 2 years ago, but certainly when the Place Matters work started 5 years ago, it's dried up and it's gone away. So there were a lot of assumptions going into the work that no longer apply. And so we're working with teams to think about how do they sustain the work and how do they move forward. So some of the things in terms of the challenges, what are the strategies in terms of providing technical assistance to get the teams to move forward in terms of addressing determinants of health and creating the policy change that they're hoping to have happen? The common language issue. So with regard to common language, defining community is huge. I almost feel sometimes that defining community is more important than defining determinants of health. I think if you don't define the community first, I don't even think you can get to the next phase in the equation. Defining determinants is hard, and it's an ongoing process. With community-based coalitions, guaranteed, if we meet once a month, the next month when you come back, there are four new people in the room. Those four new people don't know what determinants of health are. The conversation starts, you made the progress last month, and you feel like, okay, you've moved folks upstream. The four new people start to give their thoughts in the conversation, and you're starting to slide right back down. And where are we? Programs. So the idea is that there has to be this acknowledgement about how are we defining things and making sure that as new people come in the room, you're handing them a glossary. You literally are handing them a glossary of terms that says, we have agreed as a community, this is what these things mean in this room. And the reality is that words like, for instance, equity, doesn't mean the same thing in one community as it does in another. It has to resonate with that specific community or it's meaningless. Understanding determinants of health, again, you know, it's great. Funders are talking about the evidence-based, data-driven interventions, et cetera, et cetera. And we share those things and we provide that learning along the way. But the reality is that as the coalition grows, it's important to engage the members who have started to grasp this stuff conceptually about determinants of health. And as much as we can try to provide that learning, they have to teach one another. I think it's more effective when the community is teaching the community about the concepts. I think it's grasped better, it's respected more, and it's more credible. So the idea about this whole learning community thing, with Place Matters, there are 16 teams, and as I showed you, they're spread out all around the country. What we're finding is that they are starting to interact, and to some degree, we've been able to broker those interactions through social media and webinars, peer-to-peer learning experiences, where sometimes people have actually gone from one community to another to support each other in their work, do presentations, and that sort of thing. And some of the things that we've seen along the way in terms of working with community groups about social determinants of health, because of the timeline for policy change and addressing determinants of health and the fact that it's longer than what they're accustomed to, documenting their work along the way is critical. Creating a history helps to validate the work, and it also helps them to measure progress. So somehow or other, whether you say that at the community level you have a community historian who's engaged, we've used the term diarist. So with the CHI work in particular, we've had a diarist who's been working with them from the very beginning. She does everything from interview people in the community, capture what happens at meetings, take photographs, et cetera, et cetera. And part of what we're able to see in the diary is actually the perspective transformation, the progression of the community from that sort of programmatic place into more of a policy-focused place. Picking the right partners and co-conspirators. Going into the work, communities often will default to the usual suspects, the same people who are usually in the forefront. This is different. This is a different type of work. So to do programmatic implementation at the community level does require certain types of folks who have credibility, whether they're formal or informal leaders. To create policy change, they have to engage different people. What are the spheres of influence that we need to talk about? How do these people have to have access to resources? Some of these new partners and co-conspirators are going to make the community uncomfortable, but that's okay because if you're not uncomfortable, it's unlikely that you're creating change. So we have to continuously challenge all of the collaborative groups with whom we work to say, who's at the table? Where do you need to be at the table? Who needs to be engaged that you normally don't engage? And to help them to figure out how do they leverage those relationships and sort of take a more strategic approach to the determinants of health and to policy change. This thing about health in all policies, it sounds like it makes so much sense. But if you really want to have a community-based, community-driven, community-led initiative, it's more complex than we probably realize on the day-to-day. So we've introduced health impact assessments. We've shared model policies. We've encouraged testimony in terms of actually helping them to write testimony to go to county councils, to go to city councils about policies that they're aiming to change, focused on all the different determinants of health. And that's included, for instance, in the CHI work, they had a sector plan that was going to chart the course for 25 years for their community. Well, until the CHI work came into the port towns, they were not aware that a sector plan was being done. They were not at the table talking about how do we look at the sector plan through the lens of health. And the decisions that were being made about business and the built environment were going to have an impact on health outcomes. So through this work, we were able to actually get them to get together and do a full review of the sector plan, come up with their thoughts and ideas and recommendations, and actually go in and testify so that they were able to influence and to some degree change what was in the sector plan that charts the course for the next 25 years so that it actually considers what are the implications for health. And that was a very big win for the community, and I think that was a place where we actually saw even more of the perspective transformation happen. Big thing with addressing determinants of health and getting to that place of policy change is to connect the dots between determinants of health and health outcomes. The stream is really, really long. You know, and I know we all know about the example about the stream and the people are pulling the bodies out at the bottom of the stream while going upstream and figuring out who's throwing them in and why. And, you know, you tell community that and that's great, but at the same time, it's a constant process of connecting. Something like farm bill legislation has implications for what happens to obesity in their community. And it's our job, our role in terms of providing technical assistance to continuously connect those dots for them until they actually get to the point that they can connect them for themselves. And it happens in fits and starts. So for a while, it may seem like it's working, and then you end up having to sort of revisit some of the same things again. One of the things that we've found to be an effective sort of intervention has to do with site visits and tours. Doing site visits and tours in terms of working on determinants of health is critical because in doing a tour, people are actually able to demonstrate to people within the community and from outside of the community what are the hindrances in the built environment, for instance. They can take them by their schools and show them what's wrong with educational policy and what's not working and why they're having those outcomes. And it's sort of like when your parents are coming to visit and you've got to clean the house sort of thing. They'll be here any minute. Communities are the same way. They may not have met or spoken for goodness knows how long until they find out that you're coming. And when they come, it serves as a catalyst for activity and for planning and for action. So, you know, in terms of doing the site visits, helping them to plan the tours, it's a great way to help the community learn about their own determinants of health, but also to help them to learn how to tell the story about the determinants of health in terms of what's happening in their communities and why it's driving poor health outcomes. Critical lessons, I know. Please consider community culture when you're thinking about determinants of health and how you talk about determinants of health. And in each community, the priorities are different. There is no blanket statement about determinants of health that can work across all communities. The timeline. Generally speaking, determinants of health work as it's funded by philanthropy is totally and completely unrealistic. And in our role as that intermediary, we serve as that buffer because we're constantly saying to the funder, not going to happen in that time, not going to happen in that time. And at the same time, you have to encourage the community that, yes, you're actually making progress, even though you don't have an outcome in your hand. They have to have a plan to institutionalize. So you're telling them, this is community-based and community-driven, but you're telling them you have to institutionalize it. There's a little bit of a disconnect there, and it's important for them to understand that in order for them to really achieve sustainability, generally speaking, and this is just from our learning, that's not going to happen in a community-based nonprofit, unless you're talking about a rather large one. So when you're talking about institutionalizing, it really does mean, where can you anchor this and give this roots in an entity that's not going anywhere, but that's willing to recognize that it's still community-driven, that it's still about community engagement. Again, striking the balance between the funder and community, helping the community to understand where policy and data actually happen. So sometimes the funding, where it directs its energy, is not the place that policy actually happens. And it's not even actually the place where the data are actually happening. So again, it's important to recognize in a particular jurisdiction or community, how does policy happen there? Who are the policy makers? Who are the power brokers? And then to really target the efforts for change on determinants of health in the correct place. Because you can't go into a place, for instance, like the port towns that are four small cities with mayors and think that by targeting policy change at that level, it's going to make a difference. You've got to go up to the county level. Expect to change course and trajectory because you learn as you go. The community's teaching you. Resources matter. And I think that's it.